Your attention, please. The Disneyland.
Welcome, foolish mortals, to the Haunted Mansion.
Remain seated, please. Permanecer sentados, por favor.
Star Tours announces the boarding of the Endor Express. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
Recognize these sounds? Just as the images of the Disneyland Resort are identifiable around the world, so are the music and sounds that have immersed guests in storytelling since opening day in 1955. In this edition of the Disneyland Resort podcast, we'll talk with the people who create magic through the use of sound effects and music. And we'll go behind the scenes with the Disneyland Band and find out how a two-week contract turned into 54 years of performances. We'll also kick off 2009 by asking, what will you celebrate? Stay tuned to hear how you can turn your special occasion into the best celebration ever. Come along and join the party next on the Disneyland Resort Podcast. As we move into 2009, there are plenty of reasons for guests to celebrate at the happiest place on Earth. Throughout 2009, guests can visit a Disney park free on their birthdays. But birthdays aren't the only reason for you to celebrate.
I would celebrate my 20-year anniversary.
I would celebrate my first day of summer vacation.
My honeymoon.
I would celebrate my sweet 16th birthday.
I'd celebrate my wedding anniversary.
My wife's birthday.
Just being with friends. I'd celebrate making it through ninth grade.
My 40th birthday.
And you're celebrating it right now, right?
Right now, a couple months early.
I'd celebrate daddy time with my children.
Kid time with my daddy.
From street parties to personalized shirts and cakes to sweetheart dinners for two, over 200 special experiences are available for guests who are planning to mark a special occasion this year. Disneyland Resort's Sheldon Duncan tells us about some of the ways you can turn life's special moments into a personal Disney celebration. Now that What Will You Celebrate has started, what are we seeing here in the park?
We're seeing some really great things, actually. You know, one thing is Freya's birthday, which we talked about last time, is really going over well with our guests. I mean, we've gotten great reaction from both guests in Southern California and guests outside of Southern California, like Seattle and Portland. And people are like, oh, this is really a great deal, and I want to come down to Disneyland for my birthday. So we're excited about that, and we've got some good things for them this year to celebrate with us.
Well, now, what's going to be coming up throughout the year, then?
Well, I mean, first is you're going to get to the park, and first thing you'll notice, it'll be a celebrate today. It'll be very festive and good decor, and you'll really know that there's a party going on. And then as soon as you get in the park, ask a cast member about our special button program. So basically, if you're celebrating a birthday, we'll get you a button. If you're celebrating your first-time visit, we'll get you a button. So it's really great because you'll be walking around the park, and then the cast members that will see you, they'll say, hey, you know, it's your birthday today, you know. They'll start asking you questions. If you're below 21 years old, they'll ask your age. If you're above 21, they're polite enough not to ask, right? That sort of thing. But it's really fun. It's a great way for everyone to feel like they're celebrating. And then throughout the park, you'll see the merchandise, you'll see food and beverage offerings that are really all tailored towards celebrating. And that's, like, once again, a celebrate today thing. So whether it be a cake, a special little card for your dining table, all these things are going to be to try to make your event that best day ever. So that's kind of like your first experience when you get to the park.
And then there's some big things planned coming in the future, too. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. So like in April, you're going to have a couple of big things will come online. One is Celebration Roundup and Barbecue. That's at Big Thunder Ranch. So I think a lot of people will know what Big Thunder Ranch is. But we've really now, there's going to be a food dining location there. So you have barbecue chicken and ribs and corn and all that, all those great fixins. And then there'll be entertainment as well. So there'll be character entertainment throughout that setting. So it's a dining kind of character experience. It's a great place for you and your family to come and just enjoy, celebrate your birthday or triumph or reunion, whatever it might be. So that's number one. And then number two is celebrate, it's called Celebrate a Street Party. And this is kind of the group event. Everyone can get along Main Street, and they'll be coming down Main Street. And there's going to be like a themed music event. There'll be dancing and music players and all musicians and all that. And you can actually go out on the street and dance with them. So it's kind of, if you think about a party, you've got great food, you've got great music, you've got dancing. That's what Disneyland's going to be.
And in many ways, though, I mean, here with the park, it all starts with the park, and this is just one way to kind of, you know, up it for this coming year.
Well, exactly right. And people already come here to celebrate. So when we thought about what we celebrate as a campaign, one thing we noticed is that people already tell us, we come to Disneyland to celebrate special occasions. So we thought, well, there's a trend that we've already got. More and more people are celebrating their special occasions in big ways and saying, well, I'm going to make the most of this. It's like a once-in-a-lifetime sort of thing. And maybe I'll spend more on my special event than traveling afar, traveling overseas, especially now in this economy. So we put those together and said, you know, Disneyland Park, Disneyland Resort, your special occasion, whatever that might be, we can make it that thing that you'll never forget.
So from a guest perspective, I mean, I always hear, you know, there's marketing and all these kinds of things, but what ultimately it all comes down to what it means for me and my experience in the park. What is your take on the experience that you hope somebody will leave with as a result of this?
Well, I think it's, you know, what guests tell us about their experience. So somebody will come in and they'll say, I've never had a better birthday. That's the program. To sum it up, this is the ultimate, I mean, this is the place for family reunions. That's the program, to sum it up. And I'll just give you an example, a personal example, but I got the classic, you know, card as like person's update for the year, right? What we've done this year, holiday card. And they had a picture of Disneyland. And they said it was the best family reunion we've ever had, right? The place where dreams come true. And they put a picture of themselves in the card at Disneyland. That's what it's about. So everything that we're doing in 2009 is going to be to try to take that special event, which you can already have here at the park, but to make it even that much better for you so that you'll truly say this is the place to come for all those activities.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
As Sheldon mentioned, this spring, music will be at the heart of the story as the resort launches a fun-filled street party where guests will be invited to celebrate their special occasions by dancing and singing on Main Street, USA. It's called Celebrate a Street Party. An upbeat soundtrack has been created that will surely entice guests to get up and celebrate. As a matter of fact, you're listening to Corbin Blue singing Celebrate You. That was Corbin Blue singing Celebrate You. And just like that sound of celebration, there are countless sounds and music inside a Disney park that bring it to life each day. Those are the sounds that truly bring the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror to life in Disney's California Adventure. Creating the ghostly atmosphere inside the Tower of Terror requires more than just bellhops and cobwebs. It requires a talented audio production team. While you might not normally think about the sounds you experience, sound is often one of the most important elements of the magic inside a Disney attraction. Senior show producer Joe Harrington has been creating sound for Walt Disney Imagineering for over 20 years. So Joe, where are we right now?
We're in the boiler room of Tower of Terror in DCA. This is supposed to be an old boiler room that is no longer working, but it is possessed. And so from time to time, it comes to life as a spirit moves through here. So that's kind of where we are, and you can hear some of that going on behind us.
Well, and we also chose this location because today we wanted to talk about sound. And so share with us, what's the role that sound plays in an attraction or in a theme park like the Disneyland Resort?
Well, I'm biased. I believe that sound plays, you know, half the role in the storytelling process. Walt understood that, and Walt incorporated sound and always tried to find new ways to use sound. He was proactive in sound technology and in all kinds of ways to utilize sound in a better way. And you can go back from the very beginning to Mickey's, you know, Steamboat Willie, and you can see how Walt was an innovator in breaking new ground with sound. And he continued that all through his entire life, and it was so important to him that legacy just carried on today, and we still consider the role of sound to be extremely important in telling any story.
So as that technology has moved along, it sounds like it's given you a lot more opportunity in how you can introduce and use sound.
Yes, it has. And as new things come along, as technology allows us to go back and take a look at old sound principles, like binaural, for example. You know, a concept from the very late 1800s when people used tubes out of their ears and were able to create that binaural process. You know, it continued to kind of get rediscovered every few years. And then here we had the opportunity to use that technology full-blown in Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln, when we did a program there in which the technology of infrared headphones, wireless headphones, finally had enough of a frequency content that we could actually deliver a binaural show really very effectively over a wireless medium. Before, that was just unheard of. And we could do it to a massive group of people. Typically, binaurally, up to the point that Disney got involved with it, was a gimmick that was played for three or four people, and that was about it. We got deeply involved in how do we present this to all of our guests and as many guests as possible at once. And so there was a technology that had just been sitting on the shelf waiting to be used until everything caught up with it and allowed us to do something that we always knew we could do when the equipment got to the point where we could do it.
Well, now, how important is sound to the story that's being told? I mean, you shared a little bit about this with me earlier, but I'd like you to kind of revisit that, the importance of sound and story.
You know, you can't do anything on your soundtrack. You can't lay down, your composer can't write a note of music, you can't record a word of dialogue, you can't create one sound effect, and you can't put anything to tape. I use that word loosely because we don't use tape anymore, but you can't do any of that until you fully understand the story. And so part of what I've got to do is to take the arm waving of the creative team and translate that into something that means something to an engineer, and then he can design something with, you know, this collaboration that takes place that supports what I'm trying to do. This room, and I'm sure we'll come back to discussing that, this room is a wonderful collaboration of an engineer and a sound designer and a composer sitting down and figuring out what story are we trying to tell in this room. And so all those disciplines have to work together. And when they do, you nearly always create a piece of magic that can stand and hold its own against any visual media, any special effect. It doesn't matter what it is, because sound has the ability to transcend reality. It can take you to some place where you have never been before. It can create a mood in you that you can't create any other way. You can instantly take somebody someplace with a sound.
Well, in this attraction, what were some of the new things that you wanted to accomplish?
Well, where do I start on that one? There are so many things we wanted to accomplish, and we began by wanting to tell this incredible Twilight Zone story, because the Twilight Zone story has got a following of devoted people who know all those stories, but at the same time, everybody seems to be in tune with what Rod Serling was trying to do. And they're there. They're like Star Trek followers, you know. They understand what was trying to be done. And so there was a mystery. There was a spirituality to this whole building that had to come alive. And we felt like the best place to do that, the best place to start with that, was sound. We already had a beautiful building that was beginning to come together. So the stage was being set for us. And you know, all the lighting guys and all the sound, the special effects guys, and all those people were really anxious to see where we were going so that they could support that, because they wanted to tell the same story we were going to tell. So we actually broke a lot of rules in creating the tracks for this particular place. And when I say broke rules, I'm not talking about the rules of physics. I'm talking about the stuff that's been written in books for years about this is how you play a sound back. You know, we have learned too much to go back to those kinds of things. So in here, for example, in the boiler room, I did not want to have a speaker grill anywhere. You know, typically what happens is you'll have, if the sound is coming out of a boiler, you have a speaker grill there and the speaker's coming out of that. And the guest walks by and on a subconscious level, they're thinking, sound's coming out of that. At the same time, on that subconscious level, that says, bogus, this isn't real. I'm trying to take people to another place. To do that, I have to bring all of this old antiquated equipment that's in here. When I say antiquated equipment, I'm not talking about technological things. I'm talking about those old motors over there and those old boilers and this turbine and all of these kinds of things. I'm talking about bringing those things to life as though a spirit is in this room running around doing cool things that are associated with this incredible Twilight Zone story. So we began by, once we had that concept down, trying to sell it wasn't easy because, you know, the props guys wanted to go out, and, like they typically do, and buy this tank and that motor and this thing and throw it in here, lock it down, and that was it, and have the painters come in and make it look like it was, you know, 50 years old or whatever. But this meant they had to work a little harder because now what we wanted to do is we wanted to create tanks and pipes and stuff that had the basic resonance of a human body. And so, and we also, since we did not want to have speakers, we wanted to be able to have these tanks and pipes and motors radiate sound energy like they would if they were really in their heyday and really working. Well, in order to do that, we cut these things apart. We made them out of different materials so that sound would not only hit their hull and resonate, so you can walk by and touch it and believe that it's alive, it's really doing that, but sound would also leak out of it. It would bounce around in there and leak out of it in a very realistic way. And then we positioned speakers in there in such a way that they didn't project the sound out, but they allowed the sound to bounce around and come out when it was time to come out and leak out in such a way that you say, that thing's really doing that. And you believe it. So you can walk past any of these things in here and believe that it's alive. It's really working. The technology moved on into another problem that happened in this room, and that was we had to create something that was alive, that was big, that was imposing, and could really move through the room in a fairly loud way when those spirits materialized and moved through the room. But people had to talk in here. For safety reasons, our ride operators had to be able to communicate with anybody in here. So we went back and took a look at the spectral content of what we had in here. We understood the spectral content of the human voice, and we just opened a window for the human voice to work in. And that just cleared it up. And so you can have a normal conversation in this room. Any ride operator can walk up to any guest and they can give them instructions, and it's not a safety issue. And yet, this room is alive. It is really alive. But there's nothing happening in the spectral content where we are.
So you just kind of stripped out the frequencies that the human voice is at so that they didn't have to compete with the sound in the room.
That's exactly what you do. Unfortunately, people don't understand that. We see it in nature. You walk into any forest and you hear all the creatures in that forest and you recognize you've got stuff all over that spectrum. If we come in there and start creating, let's say we come in there and we want to put a generator down in the forest to do something, it's going to occupy a spectrum. Well, any of the insects or birds that need that spectrum to survive, they've either got to leave or die because we have cluttered up their ability to communicate, their ability to reproduce, and they've got to leave. Well, that's why you go into a forest and it's so beautiful, because everything is like a symphony. And forests have often been referred to as a symphony of sounds. Well, you take that same concept and you apply it to an orchestra. Well, we take it a step further and you apply it to a room like this. Everything has a place to live. And you don't want anything competing with where we live. We have to communicate here. And so that's exactly what we did.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today about the importance of sound here at the Disneyland Resort.
Thank you very much for having me.
Just as sound in an attraction plays an important part of the storytelling, atmosphere sound is a key element of the guest experience. Walt Disney knew that live music would play an important role at Disneyland. So for opening day, he hired a group of musicians to play concerts in Town Square. He called it the Disneyland Band. Warren Gale is one of two surviving members of the original 1955 band.
Well, I'm joined now by Warren Gale. And Warren, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. I think I'll enjoy it.
Well, now, it's my understanding that you were at the park. Was it right when it opened?
1 month after it opened, I started.
And just for our listeners, what was it that you did at the Disneyland Resort?
Well, first I was in a Dixieland band, and I was in a Disneyland band. And then while I was in the Disneyland band, I was leader of the Dixieland group called the Straw Hatters for several years.
What was it like back then?
Well, a lot different than now. It was, like I told you previously, they didn't even have a payroll system yet.
Well, now, one of the interesting things, looking back, that they had a band. I mean, you know, today, having a band or even a Dixie-style band is something very reminiscent. But back in the 50s, that was something where there was still a sense of Americana and kind of community music was important.
Do you know how the band got started? Have you heard that story?
I'd love to.
The brass had a meeting before the park opened, tying up all loose ends. Somebody said, shouldn't we have a brass band? And nobody said anything. Tommy Walker at the time was head of entertainment. So somebody asked Tommy, doesn't your dad have a band? He said, oh, he just has an Elks band. And they said, well, that'll be all right. Let's use them. Well, the secretary of the union in Orange County, he said, wait a minute, you can't bring L.A. musicians in here, or we're protecting our musicians. They have a right to play. So they struck a compromise, and when they wound up with half professional musicians from Orange County and half Elks band, and that's how the band started. And it was only for 2 weeks, and apparently they heard so many remarks about people enjoying live music for a change, they decided to keep the band a while, and it's still there.
So originally the plan was to have the band for just 2 weeks?
Yes, 2 weeks.
Well, obviously you impressed some people because it's still going strong.
Well, apparently live music wasn't all too common in 55, especially town band type music.
And what was your favorite thing about performing in those early days?
Being able to make money playing in the daytime and having my nights free to play jobs that paid even more money.
I mean, for a musician, a daytime gig, so to speak, I mean, that's got to be relatively rare.
It is. That's true. Most working musicians do their work at night.
Now, playing in a band such as that, where you're kind of at street level with the people, do you feel that you get to interact more with the audience, or is it somewhat the same as playing in a club?
Well, sure, you get to interact with them, and the nice thing about it, everybody's there to be entertained. They're happy before they see you, and they obviously enjoy the music. The only trouble we had was keeping people from marching through the band while we were marching up Main Street.
Well, what are some of your favorite stories about the playing in the band, whether it's the early days or any time thereafter?
I think my favorite stories are about Tommy Walker's father, who had the Elks band. Now, you must understand, he was not a professional, but he was conducting a band of professional musicians. And I think at times he was uncomfortable, but he managed to bluster that out of the way, and he got into some pretty funny situations. But for now, I'm going to go to another thing that doesn't really involve him. My favorite story is the helicopter story. Are you aware of that?
No.
All right, you have to picture there's a mass choir in Town Square. I mean a big choir, like the one they use for the candlelight ceremony. I think they say they claim 1,000 voices. And the choir conductor was on a podium about as high as my waist. The band is in a circle around the flagpole in front of the choir. We have to read music, so we got music and stands. And after the performance, the helicopter is supposed to fly over. There's a guy dressed as a rabbit sitting in the doorway strewing flowers. Great idea, but he was early. He came in before we were finished, and the prop voice blew our music and hats off and blew the choral conductor off the podium. And apparently the helicopter went down Main Street, circled around the hub, and then came back up Main Street. Because I remember hearing Sonny Anderson, while we're scrambling for our hats and music, Sonny said, "Here he comes again." And the worst of it was, all those umbrella tables down at the hub in front of those restaurants, they all went over. Can you imagine that with people sitting there? Had to be people sitting there trying to eat. And they never did that again.
Now, and you said that you've been with the band, how many years?
33 years.
33 years. How did it change, or did it really change from the beginning to the end?
Well, now, at the beginning, you recall it was the Half Elks band. Mm-hmm. Now, this was a typical town band. The baker, the butcher, the pharmacist, people who weren't professionals, playing music just for fun. When September came, now that's the... July, August, the third month, the park's open. And a lot of those people were music teachers. They wanted to go back to their jobs. So then they started getting replaced with professional musicians. And the musicianship of the band then got better and better as the years went along. And then we had a leader at the beginning who was not a professional. And after he left, we got Jim Christensen, who was the band leader at the University of Wisconsin. And now we had a man who not only was a real musician, he could arrange, he could tell us what he wanted, he could communicate.
That was Warren Gale, original member of the 1955 Disneyland Band. Clear communication among its members has allowed the Disneyland Band to continue to entertain park guests for the past 54 years. Art Dragon is only the fifth conductor in the history of the band.
Art, tell me a little bit about your role here with the Disneyland Band.
Well, I'm the conductor of the Disneyland Band, and I've been doing this for approximately 12 or 13 years. And at this point, I'm the fifth conductor that we've had. The fellow that originated the band was V.C. Walker, and he was here for, I'm not really sure how many years, and he was followed by Jim Christensen, who came out here from Wisconsin. Right after that, Stan Freese, who was probably the conductor of the band that has the longest period of time here, did the job, and he was followed by Dave Warble. Stan came back for a short period of time, so he's still in the fifth category. Then I came along. And truthfully, Stan and I don't even today know how long either of us did it. It's just what we agree on once in a while when we're doing interviews. So I'll say 12 years now.
Well, now, what sorts of things does the band do here at the resort?
Well, our prime purpose is our day-to-day basis. We'll play a set at Floral Mickey, which is the main gate, and we greet our guests coming in. We usually do that at 10 o'clock in the morning. And there we play a variety of Disney tunes, and usually we have an interaction with Alice in Wonderland and the Mad Hatter. And they do some bits involving our guests, our young guests primarily. and that's a good set. Our second set is a show set we do coming down from the castle, and we have three different stops where we perform, and one was the castle, forecourt of the castle, then the middle of Main Street, and then in Town Square. And in Town Square, we always find a young child to come up and conduct the band and follow whatever they do, and it's pretty erratic, but it's kind of fun. And then our 12 o'clock set is always a concert, and that's the time where we try to recreate this mostly the experience that Walt wanted here. We have different themes. We talk about Broadway tunes. We talk about movies. Today our theme is Music of America, and we try to go out through around the country and play some music that might be indicative of different regions or sections of the country. After that, there's one more band set. That's at the very end of the day. A day like today, it'd be 4:30 or 5 o'clock, and we do a patriotic retreat ceremony. And that's pretty good. I shouldn't say pretty good. It's very, very good. We add the Dapper Dans to that. There are four singers that sing patriotic songs, and we have a color guard from the security department. And Ernie is the guy that takes charge of that. And if you haven't seen anything here at Disneyland, you have to see Ernie do that flag ceremony. He's an ex-Marine that can still get in his. He's got a 28-inch waist. He had it when he was 17 years old. I don't know how old he is. He still has it. He is fantastic, and he keeps us all in line. And that's a serious ceremony, and it's an honor to do that. But in between that and our concert, our band breaks up into three small groups. Over the years, the configuration has changed. We've had different groups. At this time, one of them is called the Pearly Band. It's based on the idea that there was a Pearly Band in the Mary Poppins movie. And they perform in front of the castle, and they involve Mary Poppins and Bert. And that's quite a successful show for us. The one of the other bands is and that's led by Kirk Curtis, by the way. Another band is the Hook and Ladder Company. They perform as firemen in front of the Disneyland Fire Department, and they're kind of I'd say more cartooned and early American music themed, and that's an excellent band. Toby Holmes leads that, and then I lead a Dixieland band. Probably that'd be my specialty. I'm a trombone player. And we perform in Town Square also. We also ride on the Mark Twain. We like to get on the bow of the Mark Twain and go around the rivers of America. And it kind of reminds people of the old days in New Orleans when bands would be on the bow of a boat or people would greet them. We'll play in the dock, things like that. So that's kind of our day. There's seven sets in the day.
What's your favorite thing about what you do here at the resort?
Well, I think my favorite thing is the guests. I love meeting people. I love talking to people. And you see families grow up. You see a young child, and you see them, and eventually they'll come back and say hello themselves. And that's pretty exciting. Sometimes you don't remember their names, but it's really a ball watching them and interacting with them. I don't get as much chance to do that as I used to, but I like doing that.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for being here.
The theme song to the classic attraction, It's a Small World, is one of the most recognizable pieces of music heard at the Disneyland Resort. It has been said that this song, written by Disney legends Robert and Richard Sherman, has been played more often than any other song at the resort. In fact, the music is looped through the attraction at Disneyland over 1,200 times each day. Though the iconic theme song to It's a Small World has been silent at Disneyland since the attraction temporarily closed in January for enhancements, the popular song returns in February, when It's a Small World reopens with all your favorite elements and new magic. We'll close our show with the classic theme to this world-famous attraction. If you enjoyed the show, please feel free to share it with a friend. And remember, we have both audio and video podcasts available at disneyland.com/podcast or in the iTunes podcast directory, where we also always appreciate feedback. I'm Michael Gohagan. Thanks for joining us. Oh, and feel free to sing along.